radio drama style performance of the classic A Christmas Carol. Here is Act One today.
And now it's time for A Christmas Carol by Charles Dickens.
Yes, as the old year draws to its close, we feel a bond of warmth and gratitude towards each of you, our listeners, and we look about to find some way to show our appreciation, some Christmas present by which to say thank you for inviting us into your homes each week. The gift we chose this year is that immortal tale of Yuletide, A Christmas Carol by Charles Dickens. From the day of its first printing, innumerable families have made the recitation of A Christmas Carol an item indispensable to a proper observance of the most important of days. It has, by common consent, become a beloved custom in America. Just as simple luxuries like soap and cigarettes have long been customary gifts under our Christmas trees. Soap and Cigarettes, the proud sponsor of this evening's presentation, invite you now to take part in these unbroken traditions by gathering with your families around the radio to hear and enjoy A Christmas Carol. When Charles Dickens first presented this little story to the world in December 1843, he prefaced it with these words.
I have endeavored in this ghostly little book to raise the ghost of an idea, which shall not put my readers out of humor with themselves, with each other, with the season, or with me. May it haunt their houses pleasantly, and no one wish to lay it.
Well, it's been almost 100 years, and no one's laid his story to rest yet. We've had a great deal of pleasure planning and preparing this Christmas gift for you, and now it's ready. Off come the wrappings. Off come the tags that say, please do not open till Christmas. The curtain has been drawn, and the ghost light that protects our little theater from unexpected visitations has been extinguished. We invite you now to do the same in your homes. Douse your lights, gather close together, and prepare yourselves for the gift itself. Mr. Dickens?
Marley was dead, to begin with. There is no doubt whatever about that. The register of his burial was signed by the clergyman, the clerk, the undertaker, and the chief mourner. Scrooge signed it, and Scrooge's name was good for anything he chose to put his hand to. Old Marley was as dead as a doornail.
And what is there particularly dead about a doornail?
Madam, the wisdom of our ancestors is in the simile, and my unhallowed hands shall not disturb it.
Indeed, or the country is done for.
You will therefore permit me to repeat emphatically that Marley was as dead as a doornail. This must be distinctly understood, or nothing wonderful can come of the story I am going to relate.
Scrooge knew he was dead.
Of course he did. How could it be otherwise? Scrooge and Marley were partners for I don't know how many years. Scrooge was his sole executor, his sole administrator, his sole friend, and sole mourner.
Even so, Scrooge never painted out old Marley's name. There it stood years afterwards above the warehouse door, Scrooge and Marley.
Sometimes people new to the business called Scrooge Scrooge, and sometimes Marley, but he answered to both names. It was all the same to him.
Oh, but he was a tight-fisted hand at the grindstone, Scrooge. A squeezing, wrenching, grasping, scraping, clutching, covetous old sinner. Hard and sharp as flint, from which no steel had ever struck out generous fire. Secret and self-contained and solitary as an oyster. The cold within him froze his old features, making his eyes red and his thin lips blue. He carried his own low temperature always about with him, so that external heat and cold had little influence on Scrooge.
Nobody ever stopped him in the street to say with gladsome looks,
"My dear Scrooge, how are you? When will you come to see me?"
No beggars implored him to bestow a trifle. No children asked him what it was o'clock. No man or woman ever once in all his life inquired the way to such and such a place of Scrooge. Even the blind man's dogs appeared to know him, and when they saw him coming on, would tug their owners into doorways and then wag their tails as though they said,
"No eye at all is better than an evil eye, dark master."
But what did Scrooge care? It was the very thing he liked, to edge his way along the crowded paths of life, warning all human sympathy to
keep your distance.
Then, Once upon a time, of all the good days in the year, on Christmas Eve, old Scrooge sat busy in his counting house, a grim, cheerless place if ever there was one.
23, 26, 29, 32, 17, 13, 17, 7.
It was cold, bleak, biting weather, foggy withal. And he could hear the people in the court outside go wheezing up and down, beating their hands upon their breasts and stamping their feet upon the pavement stones to warm them. The city clocks had only just gone three, but it was quite dark already.
It had not been light all day, and candles were flaring in the windows of the neighboring offices like ruddy smears upon the palpable brown air. The fog came pouring in at every chink and keyhole, and was so dense without that although the court was of the narrowest, the houses opposite were mere phantoms. The door of Scrooge's dismal counting house was open, that he might keep his eye upon his clerk who was copying letters.
You finish posting that ledger, Bob Cratchit, and after that you can stop at Farthingale's and tell them you've come after the 17 shillings and 6 pence owed me since Michaelmas. And if he doesn't pay up, tell Ephraim Farthingale I shall have a constable over there at once.
Mr. Farthingale's wife has been ill, sir.
Oh, what do I care about his wife? I want my 17 and 6.
I just thought it being Christmas, sir, that...
Christmas? Christmas. If a single person more mentions that word to me, Bob Cratchit, I'll...
A Merry Christmas, Uncle. A Merry Christmas, Bob.
Merry Christmas, Mr. Fred.
God save you, Uncle.
Bah, humbug.
Christmas a humbug, Uncle? Oh, you don't mean that, I'm sure.
I do. Merry Christmas. What reason have you to be merry? You're poor enough.
Oh, what right have you to be dismal? You're rich enough.
Bah, humbug.
Oh, don't be cross, Uncle.
What else can I be when I live in a world of such fools? Out upon this Merry Christmas. What's Christmas time to you but a time for paying bills without money, a time for finding yourself a year older and not an hour richer? If I could work my will, every idiot who goes about with Merry Christmas on his lips should be boiled in his own pudding and buried with a stake of holly through his heart.
Uncle!
He should. Nephew, keep Christmas in your own way and let me keep it in mine.
But you don't keep it, Uncle.
Let me leave it alone then. Much good may it do you, much good it has ever done you.
I dare say there are many things from which I derive good by, which I have not profited materially, Uncle. Christmas among the rest. But I am sure I have always thought of Christmas time as a good time. A kind, forgiving, charitable, pleasant time. The only time I know of in the long calendar of the year when men and women seem by one consent to freely open their shut-up hearts and to think of people below them as if they really were fellow passengers to the grave. And not another race of creatures bound on other journeys. And therefore, Uncle, though it has never put a scrap of gold or silver in my pocket, I believe that it has done me good and will do me good, and I say God bless it.
Hurrah! God bless Christmas.
What's that now? Oh, it's you, Cratchit. Well, let me hear another sound from you, Bob Cratchit, and you'll keep your Christmas by losing your situation.
Yes, Mr. Scrooge.
There's another fellow, my clerk, with 15 shillings a week, and a wife and family talking about a Merry Christmas. Retired to Bedlam.
Don't be angry, Uncle. I'm sure that Bob is
As to you, sir, you're quite a powerful speaker. I wonder you don't go into Parliament.
So I can get a paycheck to talk my nonsense? Come, Uncle, dine with us tomorrow.
I'd sooner dine with the devil.
But why? Why?
Why did you get married?
Because I fell in love.
Love? The only one thing in the world more ridiculous than a Merry Christmas. Good afternoon, nephew.
But you never came to see me before I was married. Why give it as a reason for not coming now?
Good afternoon.
I want nothing from you. I ask nothing of you. Why cannot we be friends?
Good afternoon.
I am sorry with all my heart to find you so resolute. We've never had any quarrel. I've always thought you... But I have made the trial in homage to Christmas. And I'll keep my Christmas humour to the last, so... A Merry Christmas, Uncle.
Good afternoon!
And a Happy New Year.
Good afternoon!
And a Merry Christmas to you, Bob. And the missus. And to Tiny Tim, too.
Oh, thank you, Mr. Fred. Same to you, sir. Good day.
Good day.
Humbug! Hey, how are you there? What are you doing, Bob Cratchit?
I was only putting a bit more coal in the fire, Mr. Scrooge, seeing it's so cold in here, sir.
You put that coal back in the scuttle. A fire. A fire indeed. I can tell you, if you used coal at that rate, you and I would soon be parting company. You understand that, Cratchit? There's many a young fellow like your situation.
I'm sorry, sir. My fingers were getting a little stiff with the colds and...
Then put on your comforter. Put that comforter down and go see who it is at the door.
Yes, sir. Good afternoon.
Good afternoon. Is this the firm of Scrooge and Marley?
Yes, madam.
I should like to see the head of the firm, if I may.
Oh, very good, madam.
What is it?
A lady to see you, Mr. Scrooge.
Have I the pleasure of addressing Mr. Scrooge or Mr. Marley?
Mr. Marley died 7 years this very night.
I see. No doubt his liberality is well represented by his surviving partner.
That's an ominous word, liberality.
At this festive season of the year, Mr. Scrooge, it is only fitting that we should make some slight provision for the poor and destitute who suffer so greatly at the present time. Many thousands are in want of common necessities. Hundreds of thousands are in want of common comforts.
Are there no prisons?
Prisons? Well, there are plenty of prisons, sir.
And the workhouses? Are they still in operation?
They are. Still, I wish I could say they were not.
The treadmill and the pool are in full vigour.
Oh, both very busy, sir.
Oh, I'm very glad to hear it. Oh. I was afraid from what you said at first that something had occurred to stop them in their useful course.
Well, they scarcely furnish Christian cheer of mind or body, and so a few of us are endeavouring to raise such a fund to buy the poor some meat and drink and means of warmth. What shall I put you down for?
Nothing.
Oh, I see. You wish to remain anonymous?
I wish to be left alone.
Oh.
I don't make merry myself at Christmas, and I can't afford to make idle people merry. I help to support the establishments that take care of the poor. They cost enough, and those who are badly off must go there.
Many can't go there, Mr. Scrooge, and many would rather die.
If they would rather die, they had better do it and decrease the surplus population.
Decrease the... But as you know, Mr. Scrooge, Christmas is a time of year when want is keenly felt and abundance rejoices.
I don't know that.
Well, you might know it.
It's not my business.
But surely you...
It's enough for a man to understand his own business and not to interfere with other people's. Mine occupies me constantly. Good afternoon, madam.
Good afternoon.
Cratchit, show this woman out.
Yes, sir. This way, madam, please.
Thank you, Mr. Cratchit.
I couldn't help overhearing about the fund. I should like to contribute tuppence.
Oh, you're a generous fellow. I wish I might say so of your employer.
It isn't much, but it's all I can afford. There are others in worse situations than I.
Cratchit!
Coming, Mr. Scrooge.
Good afternoon, and Merry Christmas.
Merry Christmas.
What's that idiot a caterwauling? Cratchit, shut that door! Bah, humbug!
Foggier yet, and colder, piercing, searching, biting cold.
At length, the hour of shutting up the counting house arrived. With an ill will, Scrooge dismounted from his stool and tacitly admitted the fact to his expectant clerk, who instantly snuffed his candle out and put on his hat.
You'll want all day tomorrow, I suppose?
If it's quite convenient, sir.
It's not convenient, and it's not fair. If I was to stop a half a crown of your wages, you'd think yourself ill-used, I'll be bound. But you don't think me ill-used when I pay a day's wages for no work.
It's only once a year, sir.
A poor excuse for picking a man's pocket every 25th of December. But I suppose if you must have the whole day, well, see that you're here earlier the next morning. You understand?
Oh, I will, sir. I promise.
The office was closed in a twinkling. Bob Cratchit, with the long ends of his white comforter dangling his waist, for he boasted no greatcoat, lined up with some boys and went down a slide on Cornhill 20 times.
Whee!
In honour of its being Christmas Eve, and then ran home to Camden Town as hard as he could pelt, to play at blindman's buff with his family.
Scrooge, on the other hand, took his melancholy dinner in his usual melancholy tavern. Having read all the newspapers and beguiled the rest of the evening with his banker's book, went to his gloomy house. The fog and frost so hung about the black old gateway of the house, and it was so dark that even Scrooge, who knew its every stone, was fain to grope with his hands.
Now, it is a fact that there was nothing at all particular about the knocker on the door, except that it was very large.
It is also a fact that Scrooge had as little of what is called fancy about him as any man in the city of London, even the older man.
And yet, Somehow, though Scrooge had not bestowed one thought on Marley since his last mention of the dead partner that afternoon, somehow it happened that Scrooge, having his key in the lock of the door, saw in the knocker, without its undergoing any intermediate process of change, not a knocker, but Marley's face.
We'll return you to this evening's presentation after this word about soap.
Dream girl, dream girl, beautiful luster cream girl.
Tonight, yes, tonight, show him how much lovelier your hair can look after a luster cream shampoo. Only luster cream brings you K-Dom, its magic formula blend of secret ingredients plus gentle lanolin. Gives loveliness lather even in the hardest water. Glamorizes your hair as you wash it. Luster cream, not a soap. Not a liquid, but a dainty cream shampoo. Gives new beauty to all hairdos or permanents. Tonight, try Luster Cream and be a...
dream girl, beautiful Luster Cream girl. You owe your crowning glory to a Luster Cream shampoo.
We now return to find Ebenezer Scrooge standing on the doorstep of his darkened home. It's Christmas Eve. And in the place on his front door where an iron knocker usually hangs, Scrooge finds himself staring into the spectral eyes of his dead partner, Jacob Marley. Not knocker at all, but Marley's face.
Jacob!
The face was not in impenetrable shadow as the other objects in the yard were, but had a dismal light about it, like a bad lobster in a dark cellar. It was not angry or ferocious, but looked at Scrooge as Marley used to look, with ghostly spectacles turned up on its ghostly forehead.
Jacob Marley?
The hair was curiously stirred as if by breath or hot air, and though the eyes were wide open, they were perfectly motionless.
That and its livid color made it horrible. As Scrooge looked fixedly at this phenomenon, it was suddenly a knocker again.
Do you see that he was not startled? Or at least that his blood was not conscious of a terrible sensation to which it had been a stranger from infancy, would be untrue. But he put his hand upon the key, turned it sturdily, walked in, and lighted his candle.
He did, however, also pause with a moment's irresolution before he shut the door, and he did look cautiously behind it first, as if he half expected the sight of Marley's pigtail sticking out into the hall. But there was nothing on the back of the door except the screws and nuts that held the knocker on.
Bah!
And he closed the door with a bang.
Scrooge was not a man to be frightened by echoes. He fastened the door and walked across the hall and slowly up the wide, dark staircase.
Darkness is cheap, and Scrooge liked it.
Yes.
He walked the hallways, trimming his candle as he went. Before retiring to bed, he walked through his rooms to see that all was right.
He had just enough recollection of the face to desire to do that.
Sitting room, bedroom, lumber room. All as they should be. Nobody under the table, nobody under the bed, nobody in the closet, nobody. Quite satisfied, he closed his door and locked himself in.
Double locked himself in, which was not his custom.
Thus secured against surprise, he took off his cravat, put on his dressing gown and slippers and his nightcap, and sat down before the fire to take his gruel.
There now, all alone. The bell on the wall? That's impossible. These bell pulls haven't been used in... It's not possible, I tell you. It's a humbug. What was that? It sounded like the cellar door. Oh, but that's impossible. No one is down in the wine cellar. Why, it's... Closer. Closer still. Outside my door. That door is locked. A double locked. You'll not get inside. It's humbug. All humbug. It's humbug still. Ebenezer Scrooge! How now? What do you want with me?
I want much of you, Ebenezer.
Who are you?
Ask me who I was.
Who were you then? You're rather particular for a shade.
In life, I was your partner, Jacob Marley.
I doubt it. Oh, I grant you have the same face as Jacob Marley. The same voice, even the same pigtail. You have his usual waistcoat, tights, boots. But the Jacob Marley I knew was never so transparent as you are. Why, I can look right through your waistcoat and see two buttons on your coat behind.
And you see the chain I drag behind me?
Oh, I've observed it closely. Made of cash boxes, padlocks, ledgers, and D's wrought in steel. Wrapped about you like a great toll. Can you sit down? Are you able?
I am.
Do it then. Jacob Marley.
You don't believe in me.
I don't.
Why do you doubt your senses, Ebenezer?
Because a little thing affects them. A slight disorder of the stomach makes them cheats. You may be an undigested bit of beef, or a blot of mustard, or a crumb of cheese, a fragment of an underdone potato. There's more gravy than grave about you, whatever you are. Humbug, I tell you. Humbug.
Man of the worldly mind, do you believe in me or not?
Mercy, dead vibration. I do. I must. But why trouble me with your death-cold eyes? If spirits do walk the earth, why must they come to me?
It is required of every spirit that he should walk abroad among his fellow men. And if that spirit goes not forth in life, it is condemned to do so after death. It is doomed to wander through the world and witness what it might have turned to happiness on earth. Oh, woe is me.
You are fettered. Tell me why.
I wear the chain I forged in life. I made it link by link and yard by yard. I girded it on of my own free will, and of my own free will I wore it.
Heavens!
Is its pattern strange to you? Or are you considering the weight and length of the strong coil you bear yourself? It was as heavy and as long as this 7 Christmas Eves ago. You have labored on it since. Oh, yours is a great and ponderous chain, yours is.
Tell me more, Jacob. Speak some comfort to me.
I have none to give. Comfort comes from other regions, Ebenezer Scrooge, and is conveyed by other ministers to other kinds of men. Oh, captive, bound, and double-ironed, why did I walk through crowds of fellow beings with my eyes turned down?
You were always a good man of business, Jacob.
Business? Mankind was my business. The common welfare was my business. Charity, mercy, forbearance, and benevolence were all my business. The dealings of my trade were but a drop of water in the comprehensive ocean of my business.
Don't be flowery about it, Jacob. Pray.
Hear me.
I will.
My time is nearly gone. A very little more is all that is permitted to me. I cannot rest nor linger anywhere, for weary journeys lie ahead of me.
Don't be hard upon me, Jacob.
How it is that I now appear before you in a shape that you can see, I may not tell. I am here tonight to warn you that I have procured for you a chance and hope of escaping my fate, Ebenezer.
You were always a good friend to me. Thank you.
You will be haunted by 3 spirits.
3 spirits? Is that the chance and hope you mentioned, Jacob? Is that the only way?
It is. Without their visits, you cannot hope to shun the path I tread. Expect the first tomorrow when the bell tolls 1.
Couldn't I take him all at once and have it over, Jacob?
Expect the second on the next night at the same hour. The third upon the next night when the last stroke of 12 has ceased to vibrate. Look to see me no more. And look that, for your own sake, you remember what has passed between us.
When it had said these words, the spectre wound its chain about its arm and walked backward from Scrooge. The window seemed to raise itself as the spectre approached it. And soon, Jacob Marley floated out upon the bleak, dark night.
Jacob! Jacob Marley!
Scrooge followed to the window. When he was within 2 paces of it, he could hear confused noises in the air, incoherent sounds of lamentation and regret, wailings inexpressibly sorrowful and self-accusatory. Desperate in his curiosity, he looked out.
The air was filled with phantoms, wandering hither and thither in restless haste. Every one of them wore chains like Marley's ghost. Some, maybe guilty governments, were linked together. None were free. Many had been personally known to Scrooge in their lives.
The misery with them all was, clearly, that they sought to interfere in human matters for good, but had lost the power forever.
Whether these creatures faded into mist or mist enshrouded them, he could not tell. But they and their spirit voices faded together, and the night became as it had been when Scrooge walked home.
He closed the window and examined the door by which the ghost had entered. It was double locked, as he himself had locked it, and the bolts were undisturbed.
He tried to say humbug, but stopped at the first syllable.
He lay on the bed, without undressing, and thought it over and over. Every time he maturely resolved that it was all a dream, his mind flew back like a spring to its alternate position. Was it a dream or not?
We continue in just a moment, but first, these words from our sponsor.
They say that a man is known by the company he keeps. Well, I'd say that many a woman is known by the meals she serves to her company. Now, you can always be sure of yourself when you're planning Jell-O for dessert. No matter how you serve it, Jell-O is a triumph. A shimmering mold of strawberry, raspberry, cherry, orange, lemon, or lime Jell-O garnished with nuts and whipped cream. Sherbet glasses of twinkling Jell-O cubes. Oh, there are dozens and dozens of ideas, all grand looking and all grand tasting. For Jell-O brings you that wonderful extra rich flavor that can't be topped for delicious goodness. Just be sure to look for those big red letters on the box that spell
J-E-L-L-O. Oh, the big red letters stand for the Jell-O family. The big red letters stand for the Jell-O family. That's Jell-O.
Yum, yum, yum.
Jell-O pudding.
Yum, yum, yum.
Jell-O tapioca pudding. Yes, sirree.
And now, once again, here is Charles Dickens' A Christmas Carol. When we left Ebenezer Scrooge, he was lying on his bed exhausted after a ghostly visit from his dead partner, Jacob Marley.
He lay in this state, resolved to lie awake until the hour was past.
Considering that Scrooge could no more go to sleep than go to heaven, this was perhaps the wisest resolution in his power.
He was endeavoring to pierce the darkness with his ferret eyes when the chimes of a neighboring church struck the four quarters.
He listened for the hour.
Expect the first spirit tomorrow when the bell tolls one.
Chime, blast you! Chime! Oh, maybe I slipped right through it.
A single chime. And nothing else.
1 o'clock. The hour itself.
Suddenly, Scrooge found himself face to face with an unearthly visitor, as close to him as we are now to you.
And we are standing, in the spirit, at your elbow.
Ebenezer Scrooge.
It was a strange figure, like a child, yet not so like a child as like an old man. Its hair, which hung about its neck and down its back, was white as if with age, and yet the face had not a wrinkle in it. The arms were very long and muscular, the hands the same, as if its hold were of uncommon strength.
It wore a tunic of the purest white, and round its waist was bound a lustrous belt, the sheen of which was beautiful. It held a branch of fresh green holly in its hand, and, in singular contradiction of that wintry emblem, had its dress trimmed with summer flowers.
But the strangest thing about it was that from the crown of its head there sprung a bright, clear jet of light, by which all this was visible, and which was doubtless the occasion of its using a great extinguisher for a cap, which it now held under its arm.
Are you the spirit, sir, whose coming was foretold to me?
I am.
Who and what are you?
I am the ghost of Christmas past.
Long past?
No, your past.
Could you perhaps don your cap? Your light is so bright.
What, would your worldly hand so soon put out the light I give? Is it not enough that you are one of those whose passions made this cap and forced me through whole trains of years to wear it low upon my brow?
I beg your pardon, sir, and must reverently disclaim all intention to offend or any knowledge of having willfully bonneted you at any period of my life. Will you tell me what business has brought you here?
Your welfare.
I am much obliged, sir.
though I cannot help but think that a night of unbroken rest would have been more conducive to that end.
Your reclamation, then. Rise and walk with me.
No. No, I'm afraid not. The bed is warm and the thermometer a long way below freezing. Why, how should I look roving the street in my dressing gown and... Oh! My arm! Let go, Spirit! Oh, no! No! Not out of the window! Please! I am mortal and liable to fall!
Bear but a touch of my hand upon your heart, and you shall be upheld in more than this.
Good heaven! We passed right through the wall! The city has entirely vanished! And the darkness and mist have vanished with it! Why, it's a clear, cold winter day! And look! There's snow upon the ground!
You recognize these fields? This road?
Recognize them? Good heaven! I was a boy here! I was bred in this place! I remember every inch of it, every rock and tree, every odor floating in the air. And look, Spirit! Down in the valley is my old schoolhouse. Miserable place.
You recollect the way?
I could walk it blindfolded. Just follow the winding river through the little market town, over the bridge by the church, and you're there. Oh, but we don't want to go to that dreary old place. Look, there are people in the market. Let's go see them instead. Why, I wager I could still name them everyone.
These are but shadows of the things that have been. They have no consciousness of us. To the schoolhouse.
Why, it hasn't changed in the least. Not one scratch. Take me where you will, Spirit. But must you enter this chilly, barren place?
Come, let us go closer.
It's quite deserted, Spirit. The boys will have long deserted this place for Christmas. Long ago parted at the crossroads for their several homes.
The school is not quite deserted. A solitary child, neglected by his friends, is left here still.
I know it. Oh, it's me, as I was. How do you do this, Spirit? Look at me. I was so lonely. Poor boy. Poor, poor boy.
Your lip is trembling, Ebenezer. And what is that upon your cheek?
Oh, it's nothing. A pimple. I just wish... But it's too late now.
What is the matter?
Nothing. At my office, the lads come to my door singing Christmas carols. And there's a boy like that among them. A poor, pale, thin little boy. I should like to have given him something, that's all.
Is that all?
Oh, no, who's this? Oh, no. No.
Dear, dear brother, let me hug you.
Fanny, what are you doing here?
I've come to bring you home, dear brother. To bring you home, home, home.
Home, little Fan.
Yes, home for good and for all. Home forever and ever. Father's so much kinder than he used to be, so that home's like heaven. He spoke so gently to me one dear night while I was going to bed, that I was not afraid to ask him once more if you might come home. And he said yes. He sent me in a coach to bring you. And you are to be a man and are to never come back here. But first, we're to be together all Christmas long and have the merriest time in the world.
Always a delicate creature whom a breath might have withered.
But she had a large heart.
So she had.
She died a woman and had, as I think, children.
One child.
True. Your nephew, Fred.
Yes.
Come.
Fred.
Come. Let us see another Christmas. Do you know this place, Ebenezer Scrooge?
Know it! I was apprenticed here!
Yo-ho there, boys! No more work tonight! Christmas Eve, Dick! Christmas, Ebenezer!
Why, it's my old master! Bless his heart! Old Fezziwig alive again! And hosting one of his Christmas parties!
Hello, Dick! Clear away, let's have lots of room here! Oh,
yes, sir!
Dick Wilkins, to be sure! Bless me, yes! There he is! He was very much attached to me, was Dick? Poor Dick! Dear, dear! Look at the tables all loaded with roasts and cider, mince pies and plenty of beer. Oh, what a jolly time we used to have.
That carefree young man with the light heart and the gay smile. Do you recognize him?
Yes, yes, yes. Merciful heaven, how happy I was then.
Strip the willow!
A small matter for old Fezziwig to make these silly folks so full of joy.
Small?
Why, is it not? He has spent but a few pounds of your mortal money. Is that so much that he deserves praise?
It isn't that, Spirit. He has the power to render us happy or unhappy, to make our service light or burdensome, a pleasure or a toil. His power lies in words and looks, in things so slight and insignificant it is impossible to add them up. Why, the happiness he gives. The happiness. Oh.
What is the matter?
Nothing particular.
Something, I think.
No. I should just like to be able to say a word or two to my clerk just now. That's all.
Corkscrew and meet with an arch. Thread the needle and back to your places.
My time grows short, and we have one shadow more. Quick. This is our last visit to the past, Ebenezer. Here, in this little room, with a fair young girl by your side. Do you recognize yourself, Ebenezer?
No more. I don't wish to see it.
You're older now. A man in the prime of life. Your face has begun to wear the signs of care and avarice. Your eyes are greedy. The eager, restless eyes of a miser.
Show me no more.
She knows it too, that girl by your side. There are tears in her eyes that sparkle in my light.
It matters little, to you very little. Another idol has displaced me. And if it can give you cheer and comfort in time to come, as I would have tried to do, I have no just cause to grieve.
What idol has displaced you?
A golden one.
This is the injustice of the world. There is nothing on which it is so hard as poverty, and there is nothing which it professes to condemn with such severity as the pursuit of wealth.
You fear the world too much. I have seen your nobler aspirations fall off one by one, only to be replaced by the master passion, gain.
Even if I have grown wiser, what then? I'm not changed towards you. Am I?
Our pledge is an old one. It was made when we were both poor and content to be so.
Until in good season we could improve our worldly fortune by our patient industry.
You are changed. You were another man then.
I was a boy.
You are not what you are now. I am. That which promised happiness when we were one in heart is fraught with misery now that we are two. How often and how keenly I have thought of this, I will not say. It is enough I have thought of it and can release you.
Have I ever sought release?
In words, no, never.
In what then?
In a changed nature. In an altered spirit. In another atmosphere of life. In everything that made my love of any worth or value in your sight. Tell me, if our past had never been between us, would you seek me out and try to win me now? No.
You think not?
I would gladly think otherwise if I could, heaven knows. But if you were free today, tomorrow, yesterday, can I even believe that you would choose a dowerless girl? You who weigh everything by gain.
Belle.
Or even for a moment you would, do I not know that your repentance and regret would surely follow? I do. And I release you. With a full heart for the love of him you once were.
Belle!
You may have pain in this very, very brief time. The memory of what is past almost makes me hope you will. And you will dismiss the recollection of it, gladly, as an unprofitable dream from which it is well you awoke. May you be happy in the life you've chosen.
Spirit! Show me no more!
Conduct me home. Why do you delight to torture me?
I told you these were shadows of the things that have been. That they are what they are. Do not blame me.
Remove me. I cannot bear it.
I believe she married someone else a number of years ago, did she not?
Spare me this.
So many children. And when she heard that you were living all alone in the world, shut up in your counting house with only a candle, I remember she thought, come, you shall hear for yourself.
Leave me! Take me back! Haunt me no longer!
Scrooge observed that the spirit's light was burning high and bright, and he dimly connected that with its influence over him in the struggle that followed.
If it can be called a struggle, seen as the ghost offered no visible resistance on its own part.
Scrooge seized the extinguisher cap and by a sudden action pressed it down upon its head.
The spirit dropped beneath it so that the extinguisher covered its whole form. But though Scrooge pressed it down with all his force, he could not hide the light which streamed from under it in an unbroken flood upon the ground. He was conscious of being exhausted and overcome by an irresistible drowsiness, and further, of being in his own bedroom. He gave the cap a parting squeeze in which his hand relaxed and had barely time to reel to bed before he sank into a heavy sleep.
On the stroke of one, Scrooge awakened suddenly and sat bolt upright in his own bed. He recalled the words of Marley's ghost.
Expect the second on the next night at the same hour.
And he wondered from which direction the second spectre would appear.
5 minutes went by. 10 minutes. A quarter of an hour, and still no shape appeared. At last, he noticed the blaze of mysterious ruddy light which had been streaming upon him since the clock proclaimed the hour.
He began to realize that this ghostly light might have its source and secret in the adjoining room. This idea taking full possession of his mind, he got up softly and shuffled in his slippers to the door.
It was his own sitting room, no doubt about that, but it had undergone a surprising transformation. Heaped up on the floor to form a kind of throne, there were great joints of meat, turkeys, geese, long wreaths of sausages, plum puddings, barrels of oysters, and seething bowls of punch that made the chamber dim with their delicious steam. In easy state upon this couch, there sat a jolly giant, glorious to see. It was clothed in one simple green robe bordered with white fur. Girded round its middle was an ancient antique scabbard, but no sword was in it. In its hand it bore a glowing torch in shape not unlike Plenty's horn, held high up to shed its light on Scrooge as he came peeping round the door.
Come in and know me better, man.
Yes, your grace.
Don't be timid, Ebenezer Scrooge. You've never seen the likes of me, I wager.
Spirit, conduct me where you will. I went forth last night against my will, and I learned a lesson which is working now. Tonight, if you have anything to teach me, let me profit by it.
Touch my robe, Ebenezer Scrooge.
What is this street, spirit? Where have you brought me?
A humble dwelling in a humble street.
It's humble enough.
Yet there is happiness there. Go, let us enter.
Together? Are you sure that meager house can withstand your gigantic size, spirit?
It is a remarkable quality of mine to accommodate myself to any place with ease, where I can stand beneath a low roof quite as gracefully as in any lofty hall.
What is it you shake from your torch upon the threshold of this home, spirit?
A blessing, to season it with joy.
Is there a particular flavour in what you sprinkle from your torch?
My own.
Would it apply to a dinner on this day?
To any kindly given. To a poor one most.
Why to a poor one most?
Because it needs it most.
Who are these people? Who's that woman and the children?
These are the family of your clerk, Bob Cratchit.
Cratchit? Think of that. He has but 15 bob a week and easily a dozen copies of his Christian name scampering about. And yet you, the ghost of Christmas present, have blessed his four-roomed house.
There's his wife, dressed in a twice-turned gown, but brave in ribbons, laying the table for the Christmas dinner. And there, assisting her, is her daughter, Belinda. And the young man with the fork in the saucepan of mashed potatoes. That's Master Peter Cratchit. And the two little Cratchits upstairs. Listen, Ebenezer Scrooge.
Oh, it's Martha, Mother!
Why, bless your heart alive, Martha, my dear. Merry Christmas to you.
Merry Christmas, Mother.
Oh, how late you are, my dear.
We had a great deal of work to finish up last night. We had to clear away this morning.
Oh, well, never mind, so long as you are come. Now take off your bonnet and shawl and sit ye down before the fire and have a warm, Lord bless you.
Where's Father?
He's been to church with Tiny Tim. They'll be along directly.
How is Tiny Tim, Mother? Any better at all?
Sometimes I think he is. And sometimes I think, oh dear God, if anything should happen to Tiny Tim, I...
Mother, you mustn't even think of such a thing.
Oh, there's Father coming.
Father. And there's Tiny Tim.
Oh, hide, Martha.
What?
Hide.
Merry Christmas, everybody.
Merry Christmas.
Now, where's our Martha?
Not coming.
Not coming? Not coming upon Christmas Day?
Oh, there she is.
Hello.
Martha.
Merry Christmas, Father. And Tim.
Merry Christmas, Martha.
My little Tim, you darling. Oh, oh, Father, I'm so glad to be home.
And we're so glad to have you, Martha. Not coming indeed.
And how did our little Tim behave in church, Bob?
Oh, as good as gold and better. He thinks the strangest things you ever heard. Somehow, he gets thoughtful sitting by himself so much. He told me, coming home, that he hoped the people saw him in the church.
Saw him there?
And why, Tim?
Well, because I'm a cripple, and it might be pleasant to them to remember upon Christmas Day who made lame beggars what can blind men see.
Oh, bless you, Tim.
Bless you, my son.
Now, there's no need for all of that. Our Tim is growing strong and hearty every day.
Fetch the goose.
I'll get another.
Turn off your cuffs, Bob. Martha, why don't you help our Tim to a stool?
Come along, Tim. Give me your crutch.
Whee! See that he eats plenty. He must get strong and well. Come, take your places, Bob. Wait your turn. There should be just enough for everyone.
Why, there's never been such a goose. Look at it all. Stuffing and applesauce and mashed potatoes and boiled pudding for us all. And now, my dears, shall we say grace? Our blessed Heavenly Father, we thank thee for the daily bread which in thy mercy thou dost give to us. Bless us this Christmas day and keep us together, so that for many years to come we may unite here to do thy will and praise thy name. Amen.
Amen.
And now, with such a Christmas dinner, a toast. A Merry Christmas to us all, and God bless us.
God bless us.
Amen.
God bless us, everyone.
Give me your hand, Tim, and never let go. Don't ever leave my side.
Father?
And now I'll give you a toast to Mr. Scrooge, the founder of the feast.
The founder of the feast, indeed. Who pays you all of 15 shillings a week? I wish I had him here. I'd give him a piece of my mind to feast upon, and I hope he'd have a good appetite for it.
Oh, my dear, the children. Christmas Day.
Oh, it should be Christmas Day, I am sure. On one which drinks the health of such an odious, stingy, hard, unfeeling man as Mr. Scrooge. You know he is, Robert. Nobody knows it better than you do, poor fellow.
My dear, Christmas Day.
I'll drink his health for your sake and the day's, not for his. Long life to him, a Merry Christmas and a Happy New Year. He'll be very merry and very happy, I have no doubt.
Thank you, love.
To Mr. Scrooge, and I say, God bless him too, Mother, and everyone.
To Mr. Scrooge.
Spirit, tell me if Tiny Tim will live.
I see a vacant seat in the poor chimney corner, in the crutch with edge and honour, carefully preserved.
Oh, no, 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 kind spirit. Say he'll be spared. Say he'll live.
If these shadows remain unaltered in the future of Ebenezer, the child will die.
Oh, no, spirit. Please, please, spirit.
We will return in just a moment with the dramatic conclusion of this evening's program, but pause now for station identification. This is the Wireless Broadcasting System.
That was Act One of the University of Wisconsin Parkside's recent production of A Christmas Carol on the Air, directed by Jennifer Sassaman. We will have Act Two on tomorrow's program, and tomorrow we will also share with you the full credits of all of the talented young men and women who comprised the cast and crew of this production. Coming up right after news headlines will be today's music potpourri, which will include John Rutter's Brother Heinrich's Christmas, baritone Thomas Hampson, music from